Yes, indeed. One of my really very favorite pieces of music, offered to us as a great gift by Tito Puente. It's titled 4x2. And that's what you get when you have four timbales and two sticks and a master percussionist. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today we're going back to Puerto Rico. And we are going to examine what life is like since the last time we talked about Puerto Rico. And I want to introduce our guest, who is Elisa Yenza, who is a citizen journalist and who has been reporting for us the state of affairs in Puerto Rico, and it continues to be dark. She's going to talk today about what has become of the lofty goals that were set by various agencies, most particularly the federal agency, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and others on the island. And we'll talk about other things as well. But I just want you to know, as listeners, that I consider this perhaps one of the most genuine ways of reporting. This is people reporting from the ground, their ground. They know this land better than anybody else. And in the case of Elisa, she knows the lay of the land better than most. Elisa, it's good to have you with us today.
Hi, Utris. Thank you so much for having me again on your program.
No problem. Well, it was back to school day yesterday. Let's start there. How did that go?
Well, we have all kinds of situations going on. In Puerto Rico, the first day of class traditionally has had its problems. But for the last few years, it's been horrible because they're closing down schools. And these last 2 years, there's not even any kind of order going on in the sense that before the semester's finished, they don't have any idea what's going to be left and who's going to be where and how many children are in each school, especially after the hurricane. So, and there's a plan, a very sinister plan to close down schools and privatize the system. So it's been even worse. And yesterday there were schools that opened. A few of them don't even have electricity yet. They have closed schools, and they have had other children move into what they call the receptor schools that were not ready for them to come when they had perfectly fit schools to start this semester. Teachers are not in classrooms. Teachers don't know if they're going to be hired. They have a lot of ones that are not permanent teachers. So it's been a disaster. And today, the Federation of Teachers, we have four or five different organizations here, labor organizations that represent teacher groups, and they're out on the streets today in Old San Juan with parents and students protesting, and some citizens that also, honor them even though they're not part of the system or have any kids right now, because this is a major problem for the whole country, not only for the people that have children in school. Our future depends on our public school system, which has served us well, even though it has its ups and downs. Many people, most people on the island, the majority of people go to public schools. There's a small percent of people that go to private schools, but we have very good citizens that came out of public education, and this whole thing is being destroyed. I think there's a lot of similarities to what has happened with Katrina after they had that horrible disaster there. It was taken advantage of to privatize the system, and I think that the same thing has been going on in Detroit after the fiscal mess that they had there. And we follow this pattern only on this small island where you don't have a next door state to go to. It's much more difficult, and we're
Let's
seeing horrible things going
quantify
on.
this business a bit more and talk about numbers. To your knowledge, how many schools are slated to be shut down and not opened again?
Okay, well, last year, which was the first year of this new governor before the hurricane, we had only 1 month of school when Irma, the first hurricane, hit us. And then 2 weeks later, we had Maria. And in Puerto Rico, shelters are the schools. So when we had the hurricane, people were put in the shelters. And so the schools were not operating. We had 140 schools approximately were closed with the first year of Governor Rosselló. He started when there was already half a semester in school, but then he had 6 months to handle what was already in place. And in August of 2017, approximately 140 schools were shut down. And then after the hurricane, this year we have a list of 283 schools being shut down. So you can imagine, besides, you know, there's no plan and no real criteria or social studies done to see what the effects are and how the money can be invested better, why shut one school versus the other. And besides everything else, after everything that has happened with the trauma that's going on in our country here, and a lot of kids that had gone away and 70,000 people at least have returned to the island. So those children weren't even in school and they come back and they weren't accounted for this year. There's a big mess. And I mean, after everything has happened, what's the hurry of not just leaving everybody there until people settle in again? And you know, the most important thing a child has besides his family is his school.
So let
me
ask you, these schools that are being shut down, what schools, if any, are supposed to be picking up the slack?
Okay, we have what they call closed down schools and receptor schools. And you would think the criteria that originally was given to us is that we don't have the money to have all these schools. Population has gone down for many years. It's too expensive to support all these schools. So we have to have less schools. Well, you would think that they would use the best schools, right? And the ones that are really need repairs for years would be the ones closed down. Well, that's not what's been happening, Utrecht. They've taken schools. A few of them are what they call the schools for the 21st century, which less than 10 years ago, Governor Fortuño, who happens to be part of the pro-statehood party, exactly like the one we have now is, he spent millions of dollars. Some of them were ARRA funds, American Recovery Act funds, to make new schools with all this technology and theaters and all this. And they are closing some of those schools down and other smaller schools that were perfectly well and had a lot of facilities, especially facilities for special need children. And they're putting everybody in some cases, they don't even have the space, so now they're putting crate modules in for children to be in school, all, you know, jammed in, while that new school where they're being received is going to be under construction for at least 6 months, and they're closing down perfectly good schools. They should have taken all the children out of the receptor schools and put them temporarily in the ones they're closing down and do the construction without any children in the classrooms. Well, it's a disaster because the other part that we're seeing is they're handing over the best schools for a dollar to nonprofits and religious groups. So these
Wait a minute. That just kind of went over my head. They're handing over schools that should be public schools for the cost of a dollar?
That is correct.
To private and charter schools.
To people that are either charter schools or just private, because this is the other thing. We're supposed to be having an economic crisis, and we need money to pay all these bonds, municipal bonds, and our debt, right? Well, you would think that if there are schools that we don't really need anymore, there would be some kind of a sale with a bid, you know, an open sale so that the best bidder would buy it at the highest price available. Well, no, they have their little friends, the political investors that have put them in power, because we've had all kinds of things going on here. A few years ago, they had the religious people who usually don't participate politically, and they had an agenda, like the Tea Party people had, where they were against abortion and pro-family and against equal rights for gays and lesbians and all the other groups that are not the traditional religiously accepted groups on, you know, in the world. And they had this agenda, and they pushed candidates in saying, you know, we need to get decency back into the government. Well, now they're paying off. So you have one church that bought this Carolina school last year from the first ones that were already closed, a perfectly beautiful school that had a piece of artwork, a mural from one of the most important painters here on the island. They covered it up. It was an homage to Julia de Burgos, who was a beautiful poet that we had, an Afro descent poet from Loíza. And they covered her work art up. So now there's a suit going on in the government for millions of dollars because they covered this up, and the copyright, the family are you know, demanding that this piece be uncovered again. So you know how much that's going to cost. And they gave this perfectly beautiful school with the building was fine to a church. And it just happens to be that the original founder of the church had to leave the island because of corruption, and his son is in charge of the church. Now, this year, we just found out they had said they were not ready for charters yet. Well, after the governor came back from Argentina, he announced that we had the first charter school open with only 50-some students in San Juan, and Boys and Girls Club of America is the entity that's going to be running this school, and they're closing down schools that have less than 200 kids, public schools in rural communities and in small, rundown communities in San Juan, and they're giving it to Boys and Girls Club of America, who happen to have an after-school program in the school. And they've announced that they're going to have up to 200 children in the next 5 years, but I mean, this is insane. Nobody had any knowledge of what schools are going to be closed down until less than a year ago. After the hurricane, the schools were not even open for more than a month. Parents went in and fixed the schools, but the Secretary of Education said she could not open the schools until the U.S. Corps of Engineers came in to inspect them. And so we had more delays for schools to be open. And these schools that they are closing down with the excuse, some of them, that they're not in good condition, they all passed inspection because they would not have been allowed to bring students in again after the hurricane. So this is a whole scam. They're stealing our goods, our natural, you know, national heritage, because my grandparents and my great-grandparents and my parents worked very hard and paid taxes, and we had a big social project to have schools in all the rural parts of the island for years. It was very difficult. They didn't have schools in the hillsides and in the inner mountain ranges. And people, my grandfather's sister had to go on a donkey to her school up in the mountains. And now they have their schools there. They're closing the schools down. Kids have to go on buses now. They have to get up at 4:35 in the morning so they can take a bus and be at school before 8 o'clock. The roads are run down. There are roads that aren't even, you know, you can't even go on them right now. And nobody cares. Where are they saving money? Saving money on administration?
Where is the resistance to this, though?
What
is happening from on the people's side, advocating in behalf of the schools and the children and the teachers? What's going on there?
Well, all the five teacher associations and the parents that are in those different schools, we've had people that camped all summer in front of the schools. They hang their kids' uniforms and their book backpacks, and they camped out in front of schools. Just to give you an idea, in Dorado, they had a school called J.F. Kennedy. They had said they were going to keep the school. They were fixing the school, and 2 weeks before school starts, the Secretary of Education comes up in a car. She gets out of the car, looks at the, you know, the facade of the entrance of the school, goes back in her limousine, leaves, and then they announce that the school's being closed down. And we know
that's Betsy DeVos, right? You're referring to Betsy DeVos?
No,
the local
Secretary of Education. I think she has the same DeVos mentality where it's all privatized. And, you know, this is insane. We go around hearing how these people want to have social programs eliminated, and we don't want to support the poor, and the poor are not working, and they're living off us, the taxpayers, and all this crap. Well, what about the big corporations? They're taking public funds. They get these vouchers that are public fund monies, and they run a private business. They make all this money. The CEOs of all the nonprofits are running around in very expensive cars and have a very nice life. So who's living off the government money? I mean, at least when you have social programs, you know that people have some kind of scrutiny going on, and you have to qualify. There might be a few people that get through that are lying and, you know, that don't get caught. But basically, you know, we know at this point in the United States that people with a $7.25 an hour salary cannot make the ends meet. Even if both people in a home work, they only bring about $1,300, you know, clean after taxes and everything else you pay into the home a month. Who can live off $1,300 a month? We know it's already presented in the U.S. that the rentals are not equivalent. There's no comparison to what workers make. You can't rent a home with what you make as a worker. And that is in the United States. Now, Puerto Rico is an island. We are divided and separated from everything else by water or airplanes. That makes anything we need, and 85% of what we eat here at present is imported from the United States. So can you imagine how much it costs to bring things on boats? And boats take more than 5, 6, 7, 8 days to get here. So if it's something that's perishable, we need to use the airplanes. So everything is much more expensive. And then, you know, now we have all these speculators coming in. First, they did it with the bonds. The Puerto Rico municipal bonds were having difficulties, and they scared everybody to death. People sold for like 15 cents on a dollar. And now they're already up to 55 cents a dollar. And now they're doing the same with the real estate. They've expropriated or foreclosed many families. It's more than 50,000 families already. I think there's 25,000 more homes in line for foreclosure. And then the banks sell off. A lot of them were, you know, the bubble type mortgages. And they sell them off in large groups, these dirty mortgages, and hedge funders and you know, speculators are buying our real estate. We have, it's been calculated, over 250,000 homes are empty right now, and yet the plans they have for recovery include a lot of housing construction, and nobody's talking about, let's see what we have that's empty and see if we have to modify those properties, maybe divide them or, you know, refurbish them and use them for people that need homes after the hurricane. Well, that's not happening because we also have to put money in the pockets of all these developers and disaster corporations that come in whenever you have something like this with millions of dollars that are going to be given over to them. So it's like, every day you wake up, you think that, you know, we're handling this now. We're going to do something about it. And something else comes up where people are being threatened. They're changing labor laws to the point where at this point of the game, people can't even take a day off for work because they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs. It's difficult. Some people have creative ways of marching where they paint their faces and use certain things so they can't be identified, because we have very colorful parades. Even though they're protests, people take out their instruments and they have these slogans that they sing. They try to make the best out of the worst. And we have artists that dress up and have, you know, statements done, artistic statements done, in favor of the people and against the vultures. But it's very difficult because you're being hit by so many things. I mean, our natural resources, the governor just had an executive order where he removed protection for 8 natural resources or 7 natural resources you know, areas on the island, and in doing that, he took the protection off all the north corridor that we have separated for agriculture when we're trying to build our local agriculture, so that we don't have to have what we had during the hurricane, that we had no local food to survive when food wasn't coming in correctly. And there are many young people that want to maybe live a lower income life, but live on the land and you know, more sustainable with less technology and a better life, because this is a beautiful place to live in. We've just been pushed into living unsustainably with a lot of things that human beings really don't need. And there's a lot of young people and educated people, people with, you know, bachelor's degrees and master's degrees in agriculture that have decided they want to do something. And we have a lot of projects going on where people are donating their time to teach other people how to do things, how to grow their own food and how to live in community. But communities and small groups are not being listened to. And the money that is being sent here in donations is usually going to these big nonprofits that have their own fundraising. Like, just I don't want to talk bad about Boys and Girls Club in the sense that I know they do a good job, but they got a big portion of the money that was donated through the First Lady's office. You know, the American Cancer Society, United Funds, these were big groups that got money from the money that people in the U.S. donated to help the people that had no roofs over their head. And the small community groups didn't qualify because the parameters that they set for people to be able to receive these funds, the small groups didn't meet them, even though they were doing a lot of the work. So this is very disturbing, you know, because when you have people come into a community that they have already decided what the community needs without even consulting the community, they have this, you know, plan that they want. And sometimes people need other things that are totally different. And we've already had this happen. This is the reason why we're in this mess, because people that have no contact with the poor people, the people that are struggling, like city people don't know what life is in the country most of the times, and their reality is totally different. Their needs are totally different, and their social structure is totally different. And now there have been people after the hurricane that said we had to move everybody out of the hills because it was too expensive to have electricity for them there. Well, that's why we have a public corporation, because many years ago, only people that had money could afford to have electricity with the private companies. It wasn't a profit for the companies to have thousands of feet of cable running through the mountains so that 15 or 20 families could have electricity. Well, the government bought the companies out. We had a public corporation. We invested in that. The problem that we didn't have the infrastructure updated was for other reasons, not because having a public electric corporation was not the good thing. And they're going around saying now we don't need it public anymore because now everybody has electricity. Well, that's not true anymore. It messed up.
All right, let me ask you a couple of questions, because I understand that there is so much to say. We're going to get it said. We probably won't get it all said today. But there are some questions that remain from the last time we spoke, and it had to do with quantifying the number of people who died.
Yes.
Now, the news is that there was a serious and severe undercount. What is going on with that?
Okay, well, as you said, when President Trump came, they said we only had 18. And after he left, I think it was the same day or the next day, the official government number went up to 64. Of course, everybody knew that wasn't happening. We had reports of people that tried to go to the morgue, to the funeral homes, to the hospitals, to the forensic medicine building, and bodies were not taken in because there was no electricity and no refrigeration for these bodies. People had bodies from their family members in cars for a few days. other people had to bury some of their family members. And this information has not been collected officially by the government. Finally, everybody put enough pressure, and they had to recognize that it was much more than 64, but no count has been done. And you would think that in Puerto Rico, we don't have any kind of agencies that can deal with this, and this is not correct. Well, all of a sudden, we have this contract that was given to George Washington University, which I think I mentioned in our last program. There are ties with the new governor's father, who was a governor 20 years old. He was actually faculty member in that university after he left the island. They gave them a contract, which was initially $350,000, and it can run up to over $2 million. They were supposed to do the job of figuring out exactly how many people died right after the hurricane and as a result of not having electricity in their homes for months and not having hospital facilities in shape for months and not having correct food and all the other issues. We have a very high amount of people that are on dialysis and respiratory machines here on the island. Diabetes is high. I don't know if it's the highest in the United States, but it's very high. So, you know, when you don't have the correct kind of food coming in donations, and you have things like Sprinkles and skillets in care packs for people to eat and sugared juices, you can imagine what that can do for a diabetic person who doesn't have refrigeration for their insulin. Well, they're doing that count, and to this day, they have not come up. They were supposed to have a report for May, in May. They started in February. Now they announced that they got everything set up to start the count, but they need more money. In the meantime, Harvard did their own study. I don't know who paid for it, but they did a study which was not with Puerto Rico government money, and they calculated from phone calls and other errands that they did that the count was around 4,645 people. Just recently, last week, Pennsylvania State University, I think it was, came out with 1,400 approximate that they have calculated could be the amount of people that have died. But what really bugs me is any company that comes into Puerto Rico has to knock doors on the demographic administration we have under the health department. They have to go to we have a National Statistics Institute run with government money that is independent, that is not manipulated by any other agency. They've tried to dismantle that, but fortunately we've had people from out of Puerto Rico who know the director and the work that's being done and that have, you know, vouched for it to stay open. But they have statistics. We have the funeral parlors, they're associated, they have statistics. The hospital has an association, they have statistics. The people that work the emergency ambulances have it. The police department has some statistics. And whoever is going to be paid to do the study needs to come in and use our public servants on our paychecks to give them the information. So why not put the money in the hands of the institute, the Statistics Institute, and not take that money out of the island when we're in dire need of funds, instead of injecting that same amount of money into our agencies and have a multi-agency team for, you know, task force done to find out exactly what happened and talk to the doctors that took care of the people, the ones that filled out the death certificates, and do something correct. Well, they have not even considered that at this point. It is insane, and like we're in hurricane season right now, and we had one hurricane scare. We have one more month to go because Hurricane Caesar, the worst month has always been September, and we're just praying to God nothing happens so that we have enough time to recover because we still have people living under tarps. At this point, many of the tarps are broken, the blue tarps, and the programs that have been put in for repairs, there's over 8,000 complaints at this point for jobs that were not done correctly, and they were only temporary emergency repairs so that people could get back into their dwellings, but they're not living in the best of conditions. And yesterday supposedly was the final family that needed their electricity installed in their house. But I don't really think that's true, because if you have a whole school with no electricity, then they are not done repairing electricity on the island.
We're talking with Elisa Yenza, who is a citizen journalist and activist in Puerto Rico, and she has been concentrating her work on the recovery efforts in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria hit somewhat 10 months ago.
And 11 at this point. It'll be 11 months. 11, well, Irma
yes.
hit us on the 6th of August, and then Maria hit us on the 20th. So it's actually 11 months from Irma and a month and a week away from Maria.
Excuse me. We've been talking about the sad state of affairs and the open piracy that is going on and allowed to go on in Puerto Rico that put the people, excuse me, who barely got out of the hurricane, the two hurricanes, and who are just trying to get on their feet, put them now again at risk. You can ask Elisa some questions if you wish at 888-874-4888. But I think she's been doing a masterful job of giving us the details that are not readily available anywhere. People are just covering this as if, well, it's done, it's over, and everything is just fine. Maybe a little trouble here and a little trouble there, but you're not hearing the details of what is going on in Puerto Rico, such as the shutting down at this time, now when you need classrooms more than ever, to shut down hundreds more schools. So there's got to be a plan. We'll take your questions, as I said, at 888-874-4888, and you'll be talking to Elisa Yenza. All right. So
yes,
let's move on.
I would like to say that a lot of the funds that have been coming in are funds that are, you know, FEMA funds. First of all, those are not handouts in every place in the United States. I understand, as far as we have been told, that people that pay mortgages put in the money for FEMA funds. So it's not like it's not a handout every place. We're part of the FDIC, and all our banks are affiliated. So the money is not a handout. People sometimes feel that they're supporting Puerto Rico with United States money. Well, it's not exactly that way. But even FEMA, a lot of people have questioned the way they've handled certain things. They have been honest enough, and I have to give them credit for that. They are honest enough to admit that they did make many mistakes in the way they handle things, and they're trying to fix it. So I have to give them credit for that. And what we're having a local problem, my interpretation of the way the local government is handling things, is because we have a pro-statehood government in office right now, and they want to become a state. So they're not going to contradict or question anything that might be suggested or given here to Puerto Rico. In other words, if FEMA comes in with a plan that's cut off, designed for places like New Orleans or Texas, and it needs to be modified so that it'll work for Puerto Rico's particular, you know, construction. Of that we have our own, you know, cement. It's all cement, even, and some of the poor houses have wood on them. But it's a different construction. Well, they won't modify the program. They just take the money. They don't want to go against or criticize anything. This is why Carmen Julin, I think, was so well heard in the States, because she opened her mouth and complained when things were not happening. And I think this is a situation we should have in mind. And also, Omar Rosa.
Well, let's get to some questions.
Oh, great.
Tag from New York. You're on the air with Elisa.
Peace, Sissy Trees, Elisa. Appreciate y'all's continued coverage of this vital issue that's not getting covered nearly as thoroughly as it needs to be by and large. I was just wondering if you had any insights into the recent reports about individuals out there in Puerto Rico and their potentially being transferred over here to the states or island in many instances against their wishes. Do you have any insights into that or been hearing about that on the ground?
Yes, I can say that during the hurricane, there were several reasons why people were leaving the island. We had, it's calculated between 300,000 and 500,000 people left. Officially, the ones that were being helped out were people that were sick, especially there were a lot of charters that came with food and returned to the mainland with people, and they paid very expensively, unless it was a charity charter that picked out. There was a point where there was no way to get in and out on your own, and FEMA imported over 20,000 workers during that period of time. But people that had family left and some people that had no homes were taken out by FEMA and placed in rentals. But FEMA has tried to close down those subsidies for people. And there was a last date for the end of July where FEMA was not going to pay their rentals anymore in the United States. So those people are trying to be returned to the island. And the only people I know at this point that are officially trying to be taken out of the island are people in jail. This is the official movement that they want to close down the local jails and have our inmates taken out and be signed into a private jail out in the United States, which is not a good idea because there's no social rehab possible when a person will not be able to see their children, their parents, or their wives. It's very difficult for people to go, you know, how many times a year, if anybody had the money, could they go to see their you know, their family members? So basically you're dividing families forever, and people that could be able to have a stimulus on making themselves a better person so they can be with their family again, it's not going to happen. But I don't
Thanks,
think
Tad,
at this point...
Tad, for your question. Jeff from New Jersey, you're on the air with Elisa. The number is 888-874-4888. Jeff?
Hello.
Hello. Hello, my beautiful sister. Listen, I wanted to know what type of pressure has been being put on by, say, celebrities from the United States of Puerto Rican descent. Is there a coalition with the churches here, along with the Chidahat friends that, you know, donated through their churches and you know, firemen that donated to largely populated Puerto Rican areas here in New Jersey? And I'm wondering if there is a ground-to-ground, not necessarily a government-to-ground grassroots connection that's going on.
Yes, actually, in most cases, at the beginning, since everything was controlled in the ports, efforts were trying to be coordinated with one particular organization that was originally founded by the First Lady here, and people would call in, as you mentioned. They do things in the States and collect things, and most times they were not getting official organizations. So they started doing their own charters and coordinating with people directly here. Those efforts that have been done directly with people like baseball players and singers, and they end up coming on their own and they have their own distribution with local contacts here. That has been working very well, and many of those groups still have been coming in and helping with small solar plants, with small reconstruction teams and things of the sort. Right now, unfortunately, last week, one of my friend companions in radio found eight or nine barges, one of those crates where they bring in things on boats. They were parked on the side of a government building, and there was a lot of stuff in there that never was given out, food and water bottles and clothing. And it's been a big scandal, and we're trying to get it investigated because it was supposed to, everything was supposed to be given out to people, and we found that there. And it's been a big hassle, but I think that part of the problem is some people are very upset because some of the groups that you mentioned gave the money to the Unidos por Puerto Rico, which is United for Puerto Rico, and the committee that handled the monies, they've had up to now $4 million donated in money, and that money was handed out to large nonprofit organizations, and there's been a lot of criticism. Even though some of them have done their work, people were expecting the money to reach the people in other ways, and it hasn't been so. So there's a big thing about that. But the smaller efforts through churches and small communities, those things have actually been effective and have really helped the people, especially in the mountain towns where, you know, it's difficult.
Thanks, Tony, from Orlando, for your call. Ali from New York. Sorry. Yes, Ali from New York. You're on there.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Eliza. Hi, Yatrice. I just wanted to tell you that I'm a product of the Puerto Rican education. I went there from the second grade to the ninth grade. Even though I'm Dominican, I grew up there from the second grade to the ninth grade, and I will tell you, I had a wonderful education. Then I came here, wonderful education. But my question, I do have two quick questions for you. One is, I had a very heated debate with somebody here with a male where I was telling him, I said, why do you think it would be better for Puerto Rico to be a state? Because, and I was talking about the John Act and all those things, especially when you mentioned about the food that is 85% of the food is being imported and it's very, very expensive. And then I said to him, listen, in New York City, the only parade that people on Fifth Avenue protect the buildings is the Puerto Rican parade. So you're going to tell me because you become a state, United States going to treat you better. And I would try to tell him, I said, you have to wake up and see what happened with the John Act, which is really, really devastating Puerto Rico. And I just wanted you to comment on that, why people are thinking that it's better to be a state. And my second thing to you is that I meet with a group on Sunday, and there is a woman that she owns a lot of Bitcoin. And she went to Puerto Rico. She went to a conference in San Juan, and she said that they're trying to make Puerto Rico the capital of the Bitcoin industry. Thank you.
Wow. Those things are correct that she has said. Well, first of all, just to get the Bitcoin issue, which is shorter, out of the way, they have been doing this, and a lot of celebrities from Hollywood, the ones that are into this type of money business, have been here, and they're actually speculating on our properties, and we also have these short-term rental companies like Airbnb have taken over lots and structures that need repair, and they're not fixing them again for people that rent. So there's a lot of people here on the island which do not have a decent place to rent anymore because the FEMA money is only for people that live in their homes, so the rental properties are not being fixed, and we have a large portion of people that rent. The speculation is horrible, and we have people that are sabotaging statehood here because there's certain laws and economic protections that they can, it's like a tax haven here on the island right now. Governor Fortunio passed a law where people can, if they live here, millionaires live here for half a year, they don't pay taxes, and they can invest and only pay 4% tax on their businesses here. So those people which have a lot of money are constantly doing their little things in lobbying to avoid us having any kind of possibility of statehood here. Plus, I don't, you know, I want to hear real things. It doesn't matter what the Puerto Rican people want. The United States has not made any kind of statements on what kind of things they would agree to if we change the status we have, and much less they have not told people in Puerto Rico that if we become a state, certain things that are in place right now will not be allowed. And people actually think that we can have like a different type of statehood here, where we can keep our Olympic team and our Miss Universe pageant franchise, and where we can still have certain benefits for companies that come here to invest. And I frankly don't think that the 50 states that are already states would allow a 51st state to have benefits that they cannot offer. And in other words, they would not be able to compete. And actually, we had a lot of things in place that were eliminated in 1993. We had 936 tax code that permitted companies that invested here, if they remained on the island and left the money in our banks, they were allowed not to pay taxes and, you know, federal taxes. Well, the pro-statehooders at the time backed up a movement they had in Washington to eliminate Section 936 from the tax code. And together with all the NAFTA agreements that have been made with countries in South America and the Caribbean, Puerto Rico has lost a large percent of their industry and the jobs, the good pay jobs, because we have very skilled pharmaceutical and manufacturer workers here, and companies have always enjoyed coming here. Even though they have a labor law that protects workers, some of it has been eliminated recently. But they liked to work here because they had very skilled workers. It was U.S. territory. They had the tax benefits, a wonderful place to live with the climate and everything. And all that has been taken away. We have no control of these decisions made in Washington. And I doubt very much, Utrecht, that if we had three or four representatives and that could vote, because we have one commissioner resident that has no voting power and no senator. But even if we did, when you consider two senators against, you know, 100 U.S. senators from other states, I don't think we could really actually make a difference. And Puerto Rico is,
Art?
You know, you
I just wanted to move
Hawaii.
On because we have quite a few people still in queue.
Thank
Tony
you.
From Orlando, you're on the air with Elisa.
Hi, Eutrecht, and hi, Elisa.
Hello.
I have a lot of things I want to ask and say, but I know we don't have that much time, so I'm going to try to keep it to one question. I know watching the hurricane unfold last year, one of the big injustices that I saw was the price gouging of airline tickets to the United States for the residents on the island. I want to know, was there any progress made as far as any price gouging laws being implemented to prohibit that going forward? And also, if not, it's also, I believe, is part of the reason why they haven't been able to, well, their unwillingness to tell the truth as far as the death count is because they really don't want to fix the problems on the island. It's because of the whole gentrification issue. That also goes into my theory of why the United States doesn't want Puerto Rico to become a state, is because they don't feel that the demographics on the island fits their needs at this particular time. They feel as if there's too many Puerto Ricans on the island, and that's what they want to do. They pretty much want to put everybody into the cities, out of the mountains, and then they're able to enjoy the island as they wish.
But it's not a question, but we let it go for today.
I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to do something about the price gouging of tickets and taking advantage?
I'll answer that question. The price, the ticket, airline ticket price. You had the same thing happen when the hurricane was coming in Florida. People could not go by car, and you had $1,500 tickets to get out. Unfortunately, FAA controls the airline business in Puerto Rico. We have no control over the prices. We have a small department, which is practically dismantled at this point for consumers, but we really cannot control it. Prices have gone down again once they release the control they had over the airlines. As I said, FEMA had, they calculated that they had about 20,000 workers coming in. So they controlled who came in and out. And we had no say to that. And the local government complies with whatever they've been told they have to do. They don't really insist. I just wanted to mention that Omar Rosa Marigualt Newman, the woman that was working, the former White House aide, just put out statements concerning Trump's attitude towards Puerto Rico after the hurricane. And NBC News and many other U.S. news have been mentioning how Trump and his main aide there, Kelly, were not interested in helping Puerto Rico because they alleged that our government was exploiting the tragedy to pull money out of the United States budget. So I just want to mention that there was a lot of hassle, and there still is going on. It's been difficult, apart from the fact that our local government has its own issues that we are questioning here.
That's what I was saying.
I would say that brings us to the end of our program today. We've come dangerously close to going overboard. But the main thing is that information is to be shared. And Elisa, as you can tell, people are very much interested in what you are sharing. For many, it is the first time they're hearing this information so authoritatively and up close from somebody who has been very much involved in what's going on in Puerto Rico. I want to thank you for your thorough knowledge and information, and I want to thank you for taking the time to get this out. I know there's more information than we can handle in an hour, but I had promised you that we will talk about it as often as we need to. We'll get back to the subject because it's not going to go away. And so people will have a thorough understanding when the series is, completed, and it doesn't look like we will have a definitive day for it to end because of so many developments. But I thank you most of all for being accessible to us and for providing us this information that is not available anyplace else. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, and many blessings for everybody that really cares for us. And thank you so much for the opportunity to let the information out from our side.
All right.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, that brings us to the end of the program, and we'll meet up with each other. See, this is the point that I stress a lot. Sometimes we have a major news event and everybody's all over it. And then there comes a point when it tapers off and it's no longer of interest. And that is the time you really look at what happened or what is continuing to happen. And you get a very detailed look and a very detailed analysis, completely different from when everybody rushes in because, hey, it's the big story. Yeah, it's a big story. But where are the reporters now reporting on these aspects of what is going on in Puerto Rico? We'll continue. We'll continue the discussion. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you so much for your questions. I wish we had more time, but we'll do better with it next time. I'll allot it so that we have time for your questions. All right. Bye-bye.